Hello, this is Wayne Dyer, and I'm here to talk to you about something that I think of as one of the most important things you can learn in your life, how to pull your own strings. Pulling Your Own Strings was a book that I wrote back in 1978. I think I appeared on about 3,000 talk shows across the country talking about it over the years. It was a bestseller for many, many years. And still, to this day, continues to be something that people who want to be more assertive and who do not want to have their strings pulled by others refer to on a regular basis. I'm very proud of this book, and talking about this again after all these many years is an interesting, exciting kind of voyage for me, because it's always good to remind yourself that you don't want to be a victim, you don't need to be a victim, that you have a right to your own freedom in life, and that you have the absolute right to choose to live the kind of life that you want to. Unfortunately, and this is the whole basis of this tape, most people do not make that kind of choice. Most people in our culture allow themselves in one way or another to be victimized by people and institutions and family and organizations and jobs and even strangers and clerks and bureaucrats. And they say things to themselves almost from a resigned point of view. It's just the way it is. We live in a society that victimizes each other. We have to play the game. There's nothing we can do about it. It's just something that happens, and it happens to all of us. And I'm here to tell you that it doesn't have to happen to you. It doesn't have to happen at all in any areas of your life, that there are specific strategies and ways of processing your world and your life that will allow you to get out of the victim habit. And being a victim is truly a habit. It is something that you have grown up with, that most of us have grown up with. Most of us grow up with a set of beliefs that we have to fit in. I remember my favorite poem of E.E. Cummings was one little line where he said, to be nobody but yourself in a world which is doing its best night and day to make you just like everybody else means to fight the greatest battle there is to fight and never stop fighting. And that's basically what this is. It's an effort to help you to declare your independence. In the Declaration of Independence itself, Thomas Jefferson put it this way: all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. And what this is about, pulling your own strings, is helping you to abolish the forms to which you have become accustomed. There are many ways to be a victim. Some people just operate from weakness all their lives. Some people are victimized by the past or institutions or family. And I'm here to tell you in this tape that pulling your own strings is really an attitude shift, a shift away from having to be just like everybody else, having to fit in, having to do what you're told, having to listen to other people as the determiners of what your life is going to be, being intimidated by others, being bullied by others, being fearful of what might happen to you if you were to live your life the way you want to. I'm saying to you that you do not have to live that way, that being a victim is a learned habit. It is not your natural way of being. It is just something that you have accepted. And as long as there are people or institutions or organizations that will suffer those evils upon you, and as long as you're willing to accept them and take that kind of abuse, whether it's mental or physical or emotional or any other way that it can be expressed for you, as long as you're willing to accept it and take it and to fit into that role, there will be those out there who will indeed be willing to continue their role of putting you in your place. So being able to pull your strings means changing around some expectations that you have for yourself. And that's the very beginning. That's the hardest part for most people, because most people are victims not because the world is such a bad place and because there's so many bad guys out there. It's because people have accepted that role and have a set of expectations about where they fit in this world. And very often they believe that they fit in underneath someone else's thumb or being dictated to by someone else, or keeping quiet when inside you're bursting to express yourself. That may be a role that you have learned and adopted. And there are other kinds of victim traps as well. You may be a very assertive, aggressive, outgoing person and still be victimized by a lot of the beliefs that you have, your emphasis on making the place where you work perhaps more important than your own life. You may have placed loyalty to the institution of your choosing above the loyalty to yourself as a human being. You may be making things more important than people. You may be victimizing yourself physiologically by abusing your body with addictive substances or with the wrong kinds of foods or not the proper exercise. You may be victimizing yourself through type A behavior where you're always in a hurry and always facing deadlines and never able to enjoy your life. There's an old saying that I've always loved that said that nobody on their deathbed ever wishes that they had spent more time at the office. You know, like, oh, if I'd only spent 15 hours a day instead of 14, I could die happily. Or if I'd only, you know, made a little bit more money. That isn't what it's about. That people wish always, as they get to the end of their life, that they'd spent more time with the people they love, that they had rearranged the priorities of their life so that they could live the kind of life that they want to. And I'm here to say that you can. What are the non-victim expectations? What kinds of expectations do victims have? Well, let me look at just a few of the major categories of these and the most important ones. The first is in your physical capacities and capabilities. What kind of expectations do you have about yourself physically, the kind of human being that you are, the kind of body that you have and that you've shown up in? Do you believe that it's limited? Do you believe that it has to be sickly? Do you believe that you don't have the capacity to heal it, to make it well? Do you believe that other people are stronger and can do things that you can't do? The notion of your physical body and what you expect of it is something that you can really drastically change around. It was only in my life when I really knew that I could get myself to maximum health, super health, if you will. And I did that many, many years ago. Changed around the expectations that I had to live out a life of a flabby lifestyle. And since October the 7th of 1976, I have run a minimum of 8 miles every day, and I've never missed a day. And that is a lot of years and a lot of days into the 1990s without missing a day. And it's only because I have an expectation that that's something that I can do. It's not a compulsive behavior. It is just a way of being. It's no more compulsive than brushing my teeth every day, something that I do as a way of life. And I changed around a whole lot of expectations about my own body and how healthy it can be. I've changed around expectations about what I have to put into my body, and therefore things like alcohol and drugs and even caffeine and salt and all of the kinds of things that we put into our body indiscriminately and poison ourselves with are no longer choices that I made. Not because I've got such great discipline and I'm some kind of a super being. Not at all. It's because I've changed my expectations around of what my body can do. And once you get yourself aligned in a higher consciousness way about who you are and what you can do, your body just takes over. That is, your body fulfills its own perfect destiny. It is a temple. It is a temple that houses your soul and houses your mind. And keeping that body in maximum shape is something that any of us can do. But you've got to change around your expectations and not be a victim of it. There's also the whole notion of your mental capacities. So many people believe that they're just average, that they're only capable of doing mediocre kinds of things, that they're C students, if you will, that they fit in the middle somewhere. I believe there's a genius residing in you, and that genius is waiting to awaken. And the awakening process is really, once again, changing around your expectations, shifting your consciousness from a belief that you are average or that you're mediocre or that you can only accomplish a certain number of things, to shifting it to, I am a creative genius. I am here on this planet for a reason. The whole universe is part of a perfection, a perfect system. There's an intelligence to the whole system. I believe the entire universe is a part of a perfect intelligence that is making the whole thing work, invisible though it may be. And you are part of that. And there's no accident there. And you're here for a reason. And when you get your life onto purpose, You will find that your mental capacities begin to grow enormously when you believe and expect that you are capable of handling anything in a mental capacity. When you know that in your heart and in your soul, then you no longer continue to think like a victim. Your emotional capacities. This is something that people victimize themselves with over and over and over again every single day. Again, notice the emphasis. People victimize themselves with. Other people will only victimize you if you allow them to. And I'll speak more about that later. But your emotional capacities, I believe that you choose your own feelings. Your feelings come from your thoughts. And if you can learn how to control your thoughts and understand that your thinking is what creates emotions in you, then you can choose the emotions you have. You don't have to be upset. You don't have to be afraid. You don't have to be anxious. You don't have to be fearful in given situations. It may be the way that you normally would react, and maybe you'll continue to react that way. But it's still a choice. Your emotional reactions are choices. And when you know that, then you'll be able to catch yourself when you find yourself immobilized or out of control or being pushed around or victimized by your own emotional reactions. Who are the victimizers? Who are the people out there that are manipulating and controlling us? Well, I have a few categories here. The number one on this category is the family. As much as my family is important to me, I don't think there's anything more important in my life. I don't have to say I don't think. I know there's nothing more important in my life than my wife and my children. And they're all very, very important to me. I have seven of them. Each one of them is precious and dear and has their own purpose and is on their own path. And I try to keep that family life something that isn't going to later be the source of their being victimized emotionally. If you look at virtually everybody in mental institutions across the country and take a survey or a poll on what it is that they couldn't deal with and why they ended up mentally unbalanced or incapacitated in some way, you'll find that about 99% of it is from families. Families. People telling each other how they have to be, what they have to think, how they have to dress, what their values ought to be, what their religious and spiritual orientation ought to be, what kinds of cars they ought to drive, what kinds of food they ought to eat, who they ought to talk to, who they have to hate, who they have to stay away from, who they have to be victimized by, if you will. Families. And you have to be very, very careful as a member of a family and understand that while it is the most important institution in our culture, it is also the one that does the most damage. And you have to know that in order to be your own person and not be having your strings pulled by somebody else, you're going to have to stand up to family members, whether they're immediate family or extended family. The ability and the willingness to stand up and say, no, I'm not going to be what you think I ought to be. I have to stand up for it and be the kind of person I am. That's what pulling your own strings is about. Not allowing anyone, family or otherwise, to be your victimizer. The other big victimizer is the job. A lot of people don't like their job. A lot of people feel that they're not pursuing their bliss. They're not following their own purpose and why they're here. And they find themselves being pushed around and even going to work every single day and going home and being full of remorse. And then that remorse continues to grow and so on. If you feel victimized by your job, then you have to take some time to ask yourself why you're allowing yourself to stay and do things that don't make sense to you or don't fit in with what your own view of why you're here is all about. Another big victimizer is professionals and authority figures. People are intimidated. So many people are intimidated by that whole teacher complex or that whole doctor complex. They go into a dentist's office and they're the ones who's paying the bill and they're the ones who's making this whole thing happen. That beautiful office you see there is because it's costing you a fortune to have a crown put on your tooth, and you're calling him doctor and he's calling you by your first name. When it seems to me it ought to be the other way around. And being intimidated by authority figures, whether it's medical people, and sure, it's nice to show respect to other people, and I'm not saying you ought to be disrespectful, but I'm saying you ought not to ever place anybody else's head above your own. And people do this with authority figures all the time. Police and military and people who have money. And all of these kinds of people in positions of authority can be a big category of victimizers. Bureaucracies are an enormous victimizer in our culture, particularly in Western culture, where we have to keep records for everything that we do. The just make an appointment with the Social Security Administration sometime, or go to have your driver's license renewed, or go down to the post office, or go to an IRS and office and sit down and try to get some information, and you find yourself being shifted around and here and there and everywhere. And this kind of bureaucracy is something that a lot of people feel victimized by. And I think it's unnecessary. I don't think we have to experience it and feel it that way. There are ways to deal with those institutions and keep yourself sane. And I'll be talking about some of those. And finally, the biggest victimizer of all, of course, is yourself. Yep, yourself. Despite all the people in the other categories, the fact is that you are the one who victimizes yourself. You are the one who makes these things more important than yourself. And you are the victim very often of your own training and your own history and your own values and your own behavior towards your body and your own behavior towards your mind, your own self-portraits that you have inculcated over a lifetime. So when you look at all the victimizers out there and you looked at all the people who are pushing you around perhaps or you feel are responsible for a lot of your obsequious behavior, then always keep in mind that you are the product of the choices that you make as you go through your life. And that instead of saying, why is this happening to me? And isn't this awful? And why, God, are you putting me through this again? Begin to ask yourself the question, what's in it for me? What's the lesson? What do I have to gain here? And how can I transcend this and get past it? When you do that, you'll begin to move on to the next level, which I call operating from strength. In moving forward towards pulling your own strings in all areas of your life, you want to develop an attitude, a self-portrait, in which you begin to visualize and image yourself as a tower of strength, not weakness. Keep in mind that people respect strength, not weakness. I can remember in teaching for many, many years at the university level and the high school level and even at the elementary level for a while, but particularly at the university level, in the graduate school, I would give an evaluation at the end of the course each year, each semester. And I would get in a whole lot of, most of the people who would fill out these forms would write something, and they'd all say something really nice. He was terrific. You were great. It was a great course, best class I ever had. And I would just sort of flip through those, you know, very neatly until I'd get to the ones that were critical or the ones that were, I felt, helpful and honest, not nasty and not abusive in any way, but people who weren't afraid to say what it is that they really felt. And those are the ones I paid the most attention to. It's interesting. When you are looking for an honest opinion, when you really want help, you're going to go to a person who is not afraid to tell you the truth. And while you know who the people are that you can go to when you want to be stroked or when you want to be made to feel better, when you need help and you need an honest, straightforward, truthful answer, you'll respect strength, not weakness. Weakness is making somebody, saying the thing that makes somebody else feel good. Strength is operating from integrity, from authenticity, from honesty. And people respect that. I know in my own life when I really want to know what it is that I can do to improve something, I know that my wife isn't afraid to tell me that. There's a lot of people who are. There are people who work for me who don't want to tell me that, who are going to tell me the things that are going to make me feel good and make them look good and so on. But I know that my wife, Marcy, will not be afraid to tell me, this is what you have to do, or this is what's missing, or this. And sometimes I don't even like it. And sometimes I rail against it. But I always go to her when I want when I want help and when I want assistance, because I know that she's not afraid to tell me the truth. So people respect strength. People don't respect weakness. And that's something that you have to learn if you're going to be pulling your own strings in your own life. That operating from strength really means operating from effectiveness in your life. It's almost like you have to develop a code of non-victim ethics for yourself that says, I am a valuable, important, significant, divine creation. I am here for a very short time. While I'm here in form, in the physical body that I'm in, I am entitled to fulfill the purpose or the destiny that I have been assigned while I'm here. I believe in that I'm here for a purpose. And I'm going to get my life on that purpose. And anyone or anything that gets in the way of that, as long as I can behave towards them in a moral and just and honest way, I can say to myself in my moral code of ethics, you do not have a right to interfere. No one has a right to interfere with anyone else's right to live their life the way they want to. No one. My right to swing my fist and flail my arms about stops with your right to not have your nose be punched. All right? So as long as you're not hurting anybody else in the process of operating from strength, as long as you're not interfering with somebody else's right to do the same, then whatever it is that you're doing is perfectly all right. Now, there are going to be a lot of people who aren't going to like that. And I've outlined a few of those people already. The family particularly are going to be a lot of people in there who are going to tell you that you shouldn't do it this way because it's inconvenient for them, or that isn't going to get them to, they're not going to have anybody to manipulate and to control. And if you go off and just do whatever it is you want to, they might have to do a lot more than they've been used to doing. They might have to clean up after themselves. They might have to take responsibility for their own life. And you've been doing that all along. So they will be spending a lot of energy in attempting to keep you from really asserting yourself and going out and doing what is significant and important for you in your own mind. But you have to be effective. You have to be what I think of as quietly effective. And the way that you are quietly effective is you do not teach people not to victimize you with words. Let me emphasize that. Words are not the tools of the quietly effective person operating from strength. It is behavior that counts. You teach people with your behavior how you want to be treated. And here we are trying to pull our own strings and be our own person and talking endlessly and ceaselessly and having these arguments and discussions and it still goes on and it still goes on, and you still find yourself the victim and you still find yourself picking up after others or not being respected or whatever it may be. There's an old saying, it's one of the secrets of the universe. I hear and I forget. I see and I remember. I do and I understand. And not one moment before. Doing is what teaches people how to understand you. So it is in the process of doing, when someone behaves towards you in a way that is to victimize you, like your children, for example, leaving their clothes around, and you endlessly talk to them about not doing this any longer, and you don't want them to leave your clothes around, and don't you understand that I have to pick up your clothes and my clothes, and that's not fair, and you go through this tirade day in and day out, and it still continues. But when you take those clothes and put them in the trash, or when you leave those clothes sit there and don't wash them for them, so that the only clothes that get washed are those that are in the appropriate place, or when you teach them with whatever it is that is effective, quietly effective behavior, with no words, you let them know specifically, I am not going to be your victim. And this is true of virtually everything. Somebody who is yelling and screaming at you, and whether it's your husband or your wife or one of your children or a clerk or whatever, and if you stand there and scream back, it's just words against words and it doesn't mean anything. But if you leave quietly, leave the room and go into another room, you're sending a signal. I am too dignified and too valuable and too important a person. I think too much of myself to stand here or sit here and take that kind of abuse. So I will be leaving. And you don't have to say those words, you just do it. And in every single expression wherein you are victimized through conversation or through words, there is a way to teach people with your behavior that you are a person who operates from strength rather than weakness. You must learn to never place anyone in your life in importance above yourself. No one. The Queen of England, the President of the United States, the generals that are in the armed forces, the doctors who serve you, the very rich people who live in the fancy homes in the suburbs, the entertainers, the sports stars, all of these people, whoever they are, the movie stars, whoever these people are, they are no different than you. That's one of the great lessons I learned when I toured the country many years ago for this book and for Your Erroneous Zones, and met appearing on The Tonight Show many times, and then Dinah Shore Show and John Davidson, and all of these shows that were very, very popular at that time. And I met so many of the top stars in music and in entertainment and sports and the recording industry, and it was always interesting to me that they were, that none of them, these were the people that were your heroes, none of them were any better than I was. I remember what President Carter said when he was running for office, and they asked him if he thought he was qualified to run for president. He said, "Well, I really never thought I was until I met all the other people who were running, and then I felt I was just as qualified as they were." And that's always the effect that it has on me when I meet somebody who's in this high position of authority, who's got, and I meet them and I talk with them and I find out that they have the same difficulties and the same foibles and the same problems and the same pimples and the little blemishes and they smell bad too when they wake up in the morning and they're not any better or different than any of the rest of us. And what you want to do is in your own mind, which is where being a non-victim always takes place, of course, is teach yourself that nobody out there deserves any more accolades or any more attention or any more respect than you do. You are human. You are connected to all the rest of us through that invisible intelligence that runs through all form in the universe. And you are just as valuable. And in God's eyes, no one is any better than anyone else. Know that. And know that it's not only true in God's eyes, but it's true in your eyes as well. And keep that in your mind. And then as you operate from strength, you can try on a few of these strategies. You stop asking permission in your life. You stop seeking permission when you're speaking. Instead of saying, "Would you mind if I ask you a question?" say, "I'd like to know if," and whatever the question may be. Instead of saying, "Would you mind terribly if I returned this for a refund?" say, "I'm bringing this back because I'm dissatisfied." You can do that respectfully. You can do that kindly and gently. Instead of when you're going out with and saying, "Is it all right, dear, if I go out for an hour?" you say, "I'm going out, dear. Is there anything that you'd like me to do for you while I'm out?" It's a declaration versus a question of getting permission. Get the permission, the idea that somebody else has to give you permission in order to live your life or do the things that you're entitled to do. This is not at all a case for being disrespectful at all of other people. It's a case for just letting the world know and the people in it that are important to you that you have a right to live your life without being victimized. It's as simple as that. Don't take it any further than that. When you're talking to people, if you want to operate from strength, look right into their eyes when you talk to them. When you look down or when you look from side to side, you send out a signal. The signal is, "I'm not as important as you are." When you hem and haw and and maybe and all of that, you are sending out a signal. The signal is, "Victimize me. Do whatever it is that you want to do to me. I'm here just for that purpose." Watch your body and your posture and your body language when you're speaking, and make a direct effort to look directly into someone's eyeballs. I do that all the time when I'm speaking to people. I speak in large audiences, and when I'm through, people will come up to me, and I try to always make direct eye contact with that person. It's the window to the soul, and if you don't do that, you're sending out a signal. If someone asks you for a loan, or someone asks you to do things or something that you don't want to do, like serve on a committee perhaps that you don't want to serve on, instead of beating around the bush and playing the victim game and knowing that eventually by saying maybe and I'm not sure and call me in a week and all of that, you know that eventually they're going to get you. There's such an easy way to handle that. Two simple letters, N-O, right off the top. No, I'm not interested in that. Thank you for considering me. And then when they come back with all of the reasons why you should be doing what they think you should do and that you don't want to do, your response is, I guess you just didn't hear what I said. Perhaps you didn't hear me when I said that I didn't want to do that. And you never veer from that stance. And it becomes like a wonderful game that you're playing. You know what their game plan is. Their game plan is to get you to do something that you don't want to do. Or to loan you some money when you don't want to loan it. And you know that they're not good for it. Or whatever it may be. You know what their game plan is and what their objective is. And all you have to do is just stay on course. Just stay on course. And lo and behold, after a while, they stop. All of that kind of stuff stops. Because you were emphatic enough at the beginning to just simply say no. If you're a non-smoker and other people are smoking around you or anything like that, and you feel that they're violating your right to have your lungs free from their noxious smoke, then don't be afraid to politely ask someone to do it. Test yourself. Give yourself an opportunity to test your operating from strength behavior. Don't sit there and inhale smoke for an entire evening. In fact, that's one of the reasons why it's become less fashionable for people to smoke and why fewer and fewer people are doing it, which is wonderful. Because it used to be that the smokers were in the majority and the non-smokers were the victims. It doesn't have to be that way any longer. And now you're seeing it reversing. People are beginning to pull their own strings. Try calling some people by their first name. Instead of yes sir-ing and doctor this and professor that and sir this and all that, just see what happens. You find that when you keep yourself level with other people, if they're calling you by your first name, they're not any better than you because they have a title, and that isn't necessarily a way that you show people respect. You don't show people respect by what you call them. You show people respect by how you interact with them and how you treat them as human beings. And calling your physician by his first name or whatever is, or whomever it may be, if it's a problem. If it's not, then do it any way you want to. But if you're working on not putting and elevating other people in importance to you, then you have to work on it in all kinds of areas. And the thing that you fear the most, you find that those people, that there was nothing there to fear in the first place. I prefer being called Wayne. I don't like it when people call me doctor this or professor. I don't need that. And I, when somebody comes up to me and says, hi, Wayne, how you doing, or whatever, whoever they are, I always feel that that's a person who's operating from strength. I have more respect for that than I do for the need for someone to place the title. Never be afraid to go over someone's head if you feel like you're being victimized, whether it's in a store or in a business or in a bank or whatever it may be. You don't have to do that callously, but simply just don't assume that because someone has told you something that is going to put you in a position of being a victim, that you now therefore have to accept that. There's always another way. There's always another. And as long as you keep an open mind to that and know that there's someone else that you can go to, that there's some other avenue that you can take, you'll find yourself less and less being victimized. And particularly when those people know that you're not afraid to do that. I found that in dealing with people at banks, that I go directly to the person that I know has authority, if I want something. And it's much more effective than dealing with all of the people in the middle who are really paid to keep you from reaching the person who makes that decision in the first place. When you're being interviewed for a job or when you're in a situation that might be troubling for you, that's a good time to practice assertive behaviors. You don't ever say things like, I'm not sure if I could handle this. Instead, you say, I'm sure I could handle this. I'm sure I could, because I've found in my own life that there's never been anything that I couldn't handle if I really put my mind to it. You send out that kind of a signal, but it has to come from an integrity, from an honesty, from a belief that you know inside that there is nothing that you have to be afraid of or that you can't handle if you're given the sufficient training. And finally, refuse to pay for poor quality and refuse to tip for it as well. Stand up for that. It isn't just an obligation to just turn over your hard-earned money to someone who is giving you poor service or poor quality. You're entitled, if you pay for something, to have the best. You're entitled to that. And it doesn't mean that you have to treat other people in a supercilious manner in any way. It just means that you're entitled to that. And you don't have to be obnoxious about it, and you don't have to be cheap about it. I have found that when I'm dealing with waiters and waitresses and so on, that that I consider myself a very generous tipper. I always have believed that if you're debating between giving $3 and $4, always go with the higher number, because what goes around comes around, and it's just a good way to be, and it's what your purpose is all about. It's about giving and sharing and caring for others. And if the service is poor, I don't just leave nothing or anything like that. I generally tell them, I say, gee, you're really having a tough time here tonight. There's a lot of people, and it must be. And generally, they will explain what's going on. Oh, there's a cook back in the kitchen who didn't show up, or there's, you walk out not feeling like you were victimized. And so you can, when you ask, instead of just sit there and fume, I was just flying on an airplane just the other day, and I found we were 20 minutes late. And the pilot had made no announcement. And I feel victimized when things like that happen. I feel that I'm the one that he's flying here. That's the reason he's got all of those bars on his uniform and so on. Because there's people like me who are willing to plunk down several hundred dollars to go from Chicago to New York. And here we are 20, 25 minutes late, and no announcement has ever been made about that. And we took off on time. And I just feel that the passengers are entitled to know that. So I just send a note to the stewardess and said, would you ask the captain to please make an announcement on why we're late? And sure enough, in another minute, he made an announcement. He even apologized for not having done it. So rather than sit there like a victim and feel like I don't know what's going on, he said there was some storms up, over Lake Erie or someplace, and they had to veer around, and they were going around. And I was grateful. I don't want them flying through those storms. That's fine. I just want to know. I believe that I'm entitled to that. And rather than be angry and all of those kinds of things, you operate from strength. You quietly, effectively get what it is that you're looking for. And that's really the message here. You don't have to be a victim, ever. And if you are, you look at your own behavior rather than those who are treating you in some way that you don't like. One of the big victim traps that so many people find themselves in is being seduced by what is over. I always tell people what is over, and you can't change it, you can't should have done it, you can't would have done it, you can't could have done it. You've got to stop all that shoulding on yourself, if you will. And what you want to do here is look at how you get to be victimized by things that have already happened. Like, I can remember moving from Michigan to New York when I took a position as a professor at St. John's University in 1971 or 72. And I arrived on Long Island, brand new home. It was on a Wednesday. We had left on Wednesday. We drove there. We got there on a Friday afternoon. I had a new little baby girl. And we got to our home, and there was no electricity. So I called Lilco, the Long Island Lighting Company. And I got on with them, and this was Friday afternoon now, and I said to the girl who answered the phone, I'd like to have my electricity turned on. We've got a little baby, and we need to have warm. And it was in October. And she said, I'm sorry, sir. You should have called on Wednesday. So I put my finger up and down on the phone real hard about three or four times. I said, excuse me, is this Earth? And she said, of course it's Earth. What are you talking about? This is local. I said, well, on Earth, where I've lived for the last 31 years, you can never should have called on Wednesday, on Friday. You can't do that on our planet. She said, would you go through that one more time? I said, real easy. I said, on Earth, you can never should have called on Wednesday, on Friday. You can't do that. It's Friday. I can't should have called on Wednesday. She said, I think you better talk to my supervisor. And it took me like three supervisors before I got someone who understood that I didn't want to be told what I should have done or what I could have done or what I would have done. I wanted my electricity turned on. And I kept it very light and amusing and so on. And sure enough, someone was sent out that afternoon and I had my electricity turned on. Now, I can call next Wednesday, but I can't should have called on Wednesday. And you can't should have called or should have done anything. Everything that you did in your life up until this moment is over. It's done. It had to happen in order for you to get to the next level. Accept that. Don't allow yourself to be victimized by things that you can't change, things that are over. Your parents were the parents that they were. Your parents did what they knew how to do, given the conditions of their life. They didn't do it good. They didn't do it bad. They weren't right. They weren't wrong. They just were who they were. And they did what they knew how to do. And if what they knew how to do didn't fit in with what you think they should have been doing, then learn from it. Grow from it. Don't be full of anger and hatred for them. That's the biggest victim trap you can get into, being mad at somebody for what they did 25 years ago. And besides, they're a different person today anyway and probably wouldn't do it that way at all. So what you want to do is look at everything that you find yourself upset about or manipulated by or controlled by and change all of that. Shift it around. Shift it around to a new kind of consciousness. And that consciousness is, I can't change what's over. So all of the things that you did in your past, and all of the shoulds that people are imposing on you, are things that you're going to have to watch out for. One of the big victim traps people are going to use is they're going to tell you what you should have done. If only you would have listened to me. If only you would have done it before. If only you would have done things the way I said. And when anybody ever does that, that sends off a signal in me. There's a flag that goes up. And I put that, it's a mental flag, and it goes right up into my head. And that flag, it says, I can't, should have done it that way. I already did that. That's already over. And if somebody starts telling me over and over what, if only you would have listened to me, I will even ask them questions like, how can I have listened to you now? How can I do that? Explain how I can do that. And usually that just stops them because they see that there's no way that you can have listened to them when that time is over. If only you wouldn't have moved to Chicago in 1957. If only you wouldn't have done that, you wouldn't be having all these troubles now. How could you not have moved in 1957 when it's in 1991? How can you do that? It's not possible. So you have to be watchful for that and look out for the victimizers who will resort to looking at what is over and try to keep you their victim by constantly putting you back there. Let's take a look at some of these tactics that, quote, victimizers, unquote, use to keep you from being all that you want to be, keeping in mind that you are, at this point now, refusing to be seduced by what is over. It's over. You're not going to let anybody refer to it. You're not going to refer to it yourself. You're just simply going to be in the present or in the future. Question. Why did you do it that way? Great victimizing stance. Gets you in the position of having to defend yourself. It's already done that way. Instead of asking you, what did you learn from what you've done, and how can we repeat these errors in the future, they want to get into the whys. And what they're doing, of course, is looking for blame. And as soon as they can blame you and assign some kind of fault to what has just transpired, then you, of course, are the nice little victim. Another one. If you had only consulted me first. But it's over. That's what you have to always remind yourself. It's over. Sure, if you would have consulted them, perhaps you would have done it different. But you can never should have consulted them now when it's already over. You can't consult them on Friday about Wednesday. You can't do that any longer. Next Wednesday? Yes, not last Wednesday. Or we've always done it this way. Again, a reference to the past. Things have always been done that way. Therefore, you will continue to do them that way. And if you don't do them that way, then you are going to have to explain yourself. And as soon as I get you in the position of having to explain yourself, you are my victim and I'm in charge. Or if you said it before, why don't you mean it now? You told me this before. You told me you loved me, and now you're telling me that you don't. The assumption, of course, is that people don't change. And because you say something one way a long time ago, that it still applies today. The now is the working unit of your life. The past is a thought. It's formless. It's dimensionless. You can't have it back in the physical world. The only place you can have it is in your mind. So that any reference to what was done in the past or what you said in the past is just usually an effort to get you to be their willing victim. If you don't go there, if you just know in your mind, see, it's almost like a new perception of reality for you. You begin to perceive reality the way it is, now, in the moment. And all of that stuff back there is only just a learning. It's only to be recalled if it's going to be effective now. If it's designed to get you to feel bad or to be manipulated, you don't go there. You simply don't go down that road.